This program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Another Sunday edition of the program today. Tom Schroeder, of course, our host, our guest attorney today, Cindy Ackerman, on the topic of wills, trusts, and estates 101. Thanks so much for joining us. By the way, we'll return to our normal time slot next Saturday at noon here on News Radio 830 WCCO. Here's Tom Schroeder.
It's really been fun to put these on because we've covered areas of the law that are really important for most people in all aspects of their lives. And today's program is no exception. Wills, Trusts, and Estates 101, presented by Cindy Ackerman. Hello, Cindy.
Hi, Tom. Welcome. Thank you for having me back.
Yes, you've been on the show now.
Six times, half a dozen.
I think you're the leading repeat offender here.
Well.
And
yes,
we have
as long as you're welcome
after the show, we have a special award.
All right, yes. Well, we're thrilled to have you back, Cindy. You always do a great job, and of course, wills, trusts, and estates touch just literally everyone because nothing is more certain, as they say, than death and taxes.
That's correct. And then the question is whether you're going to control how you distribute your property, or are you going to let the state decide?
And I know most people would vote in favor of controlling their own destiny or the destiny of their estate in their absence, as opposed to letting a law that was passed with all good intentions govern who gets what.
That's right. And so if we want to do that, one of the steps is to create a will.
And a will, it seems like such a magical instrument. It has to, it has to look in a certain way, have a ribbon on it, a seal. Is that true?
Actually not. It needs to be in writing. It needs to be signed by the person who creates the will, and that person we call is a testator, and it needs to be witnessed by two witnesses. And there are some old cases where somebody scribbled on, I think it was on a wall or on a dresser drawer, and they actually cut out that piece of the wall and submitted it to the probate court to probate.
All right, so you don't need any legal mumbo-jumbo necessarily?
No, you just have to state how you wish your assets to be distributed.
Okay, so a person can have an informal will because all it takes is something in writing signed by the testator, the person with the estate, and then witnessed by two different people.
That's correct.
Can it be relatives and friends?
Well, it can be. Under Minnesota, it can be even someone that you name in the will to receive your assets. Just because they have an interest in your will doesn't mean they're invalidated from being a witness.
We, of course, don't want to put lawyers out of business here. Why would anyone bother to see a lawyer to get a will prepared?
Well, sometimes we think we understand what we're doing, and we don't get all the pieces.
Does everybody need a will?
Well, you know, That's a good question, and I have a couple of thoughts on that.
Sure.
First of all, if you don't like the way the Minnesota law says how your assets will be distributed, you're going to want to do a will because you want to control how your assets are distributed. And then there are cases where there are certain types of people that really should have a will. For example, there was just on October 10th, Star Tribune had an article about unmarried couples, that there's been a spike in the census for unmarried couples. And those people that are unmarried couples, especially with minor children, really should consider having a will for two reasons. First of all, unmarried couples do not have the protections under the law that a married couple would have. For example, if you are married you pass away, your surviving spouse has certain rights that are guaranteed under the law, a right to a homestead, a right to certain personal property, a right to family maintenance. Those rights are not allowed to an unmarried couple. And then if you have minor children, you're going to want to do a will so that you can name a guardian, someone who's going to take custody of your child and make medical decisions for them and make decisions in school for them. If you don't have a will, then you're leaving it up to the state to decide.
But even if I'm single and never married, have no children, should I have a will? Is there a reason for me to have a will? I mean, what happens to my property if I don't?
Well, if you don't have a will, then the state was going to decide. And under the statute, it follows basically follows your family tree. So if you don't have a spouse, you don't have children, it goes to your parents. If your parents aren't living, it's going to go to siblings. If you don't have siblings, it's going to go to nieces and nephews. And it basically works through the family tree until they find someone. And we call those in the estate planning area, those are laughing heirs, because they get a letter saying you're a beneficiary of an estate, and you don't even know who the person is who died because you're so remotely connected.
And how do you track, or how does the court track those people down?
Well, it's actually not the court. It's whoever is handling the estate is going to have to hire a search firm. There are search firms, international heir search firms, that will, you know, do the check the census records and all other records to try to trace and create a family tree to find those heirs.
I read an article not long ago about a search firm like you're talking about that had archives of decades of telephone books that they went through and read in different communities to try to figure out who the heirs were.
That's right. And I had an estate once where we had to track someone down, and the personal representative literally went to knew kind of where that person lived and went to the old church records and looked in the cemeteries and to find records, you know, to prove death.
Interesting stuff, and I assume they get paid well for that work.
They do. Their search firms certainly do.
Now, quickly, before we head into the break here, Cindy, people, I think, are afraid of wills, as we talked about, and they don't need to be, but also they're afraid of estate planning. I think it's a big, expensive, complicated, messy project that'll entail them giving up their property. But shouldn't everybody have an estate plan as much as they should have a will?
Well, you know, I sometimes have clients say to me, well, I just need a will. I don't need an estate plan. And really, a will is part of an estate plan. When we do an estate plan, we want to pull all the pieces together into one cohesive whole. So if you do a will and you're giving it to your son, but all of your property is titled either joint with your girlfriend or you designate your girlfriend as the beneficiary of life insurance or IRA accounts, that's going to go to the girlfriend and your son's going to get nothing.
So estate planning is for everyone.
Exactly.
We have more Cindy Ackerman, Tom Schroyer. It is Wills, Trusts, and Estates 101 on the program today. Minnesota Law normally comes your way Saturdays at noon here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
To fight the good fight. Did you know Minnesota rules recommend that licensed attorneys provide 50 hours each year of pro bono or free legal services to persons of limited means, the disadvantaged, or charities?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO. Put a face with the voice. Catch up with your favorite WCCO personalities on their webpage at WCCORadio.com.
Welcome back to Minnesota Law Sunday Edition. Normally you hear the program Saturdays between noon and 1 o'clock. You will hear us next Saturday at noon here on News Radio 830 WCCO in the spotlight. Wills, Trusts, and Estates 101. Cindy Ackerman is our guest attorney on the program. Tom Schroyer is our host. Once again, here's Tom.
Thanks, Steve. We're talking with Cindy Ackerman about various aspects of wills, trusts, and estates, and we finished the last segment talking about issues that might arise if people were to do their own will. And, you know, we're seeing so often nowadays the availability of will forms on the internet. And I'm just wondering, do they work?
Maybe. I always like it when people do their own wills, because that usually means I've got a good probate estate coming in. You have to be careful if you're going to use those forms. A lot of times they're created under a state that maybe it's not your state, and so the law is a little different. Although there is a uniform probate code, not all the estates have adopted it. So you have to be careful there. And plus, when you're filling out the form, it's not just simply filling in blanks. You have to think through and make sure you're covering everything. I had one estate where very clearly he filled in the blank and said, yeah, he wanted his nieces to have his checking account and his savings account and the personal property, and that was the end of it. Well, he totally forgot he had a condo. And so we had to have a formal probate in order to pass that condo. And actually, because he didn't have a clause in his will that said, well, if something happens, you know, here's like a default provision, we ended up having to follow Minnesota intestacy to distribute that condo. And so that condo actually went, not his wishes were that his nieces would receive those assets, but because he didn't fill out the form correctly, it actually went to his, I think it was his sister.
Yeah, we'll talk at the top of the or the closing of the program about some of the issues that we face in probate. I've litigated a number of cases with you, and those certainly are heartbreaking and often calamitous, financially ruinous for the parties.
Yes, and very full of emotion.
You know, in terms of a will, I'm reminded of an article I read way many years ago in Ann Landers' column, where she was talking, giving advice about whether folks should have a will. And she basically said parents should have a will so that their children don't end up fighting with each other.
And that's true. And I think we're seeing that more now as the wealth is shifting through the baby boomer generation, that there are more conflicts.
So a will is not only a way to control where your property goes, it's also a way to avoid conflicts and to minimize the costs that get taken out of the estate in the event that there's a contest over what is supposed to happen with the estate.
Yes, there actually is a statute that allows you to put a provision in that says that if one of the beneficiaries contests the will, that they forego their share. And that provision is effective unless the beneficiary can show that there's good cause for the reason to contest. So usually you object to a will by saying there was undue influence. And if that beneficiary can show that there is facts that support that, then that clause, that no contest clause, is not effective.
In television and movies over the years, you always hear the line, I'm going to write you out of the will. How easy is it to change a will at any given point?
It's very easy. As long as you understand who your family members are and understand what your assets are and can hold it all together to make a decision, you have capacity to make a will or to make what we call a codicil, which is just to change a piece of your will. And so you don't have any obligations to leave. You can't disinherit a spouse, but other than that, you have no other obligations to leave your children or your grandchildren anything.
Would it be a good idea, though, if I'm making a will, to give copies out to my relatives so that they know what they're getting? And then what if I do that? What if I later change my mind? Aren't they going to be running into court with their copies to prove that up as my will?
Well, I would not be giving everybody copies, but I think it's good to have open communication as long as the family dynamics work so that everybody understands what you're doing and there's no hard feelings. And that doesn't always work, because I know we're working on a case right now where there was open communication and there was an offer to come, if you've got a problem with the way this works, come and talk to me now. And they didn't. And now they're objecting to the will and we're in a contest situation.
I've also heard that people have been named the executor of a will. Should you run the other way and say, I want no part of that?
Yes, actually.
You know, good. So I'm going to run the other way.
You're going to run the other way. It's a big job. It's very time-consuming. You have to be very detail-oriented, and it's hard. You know, you're dealing not only with the physical of, you know, marshaling the assets and paying bills, but you have to deal with the emotional aspects of the beneficiaries.
And if I'm appointed as an executor, do I get paid for all that time I have to put into this project?
Yes. Under Minnesota law, you're entitled to reasonable compensation based on a number of factors, you know, the level of complexity and your time and effort.
Now, we know that the tax laws are scheduled to change, or they're supposed to change anyway, as we're speaking here at the end of the year, and go from no estate tax due in 2010 to back to the rates that existed back in the pre-Bush presidency era.
That's correct. Right now, we have no federal estate tax. We have Minnesota estate tax on estates basically over a million. We still have a gift tax. But starting January 1st, we have federal tax back at the old rates. So we have $1 million exemption with a 55% tax rate with a surcharge over $10 million of to 60%.
I suppose it's both a good time to do estate planning, but also a risky time because the law may change, and I expect a lot of folks think it will, with the new Congress coming in.
That's correct. There are several bills pending before the Senate right now. And we're expecting after the elections that there might be some movement on those bills.
All right. It is Minnesota Law Sunday edition. Cindy Ackerman is our guest attorney today. Wills, Trusts, and Estates 101. Tom Schroyer, of course, is our host. We'll be back in our normal time slot next Saturday at noon. We're moments away from the weather and a quick update on the NFL scores here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
From the Buick Studios in downtown Minneapolis, this is News Radio 830 WCCO.
It is Minnesota Law Sunday edition. Normally Saturdays between noon and 1 o'clock. You can hear the program next week, Saturday at noon. It is Wills, Trusts, and Estates 101. Cindy Ackerman is our guest attorney today from Moss and Burnett. Tom Schroyer is our host. Here's Tom.
Cindy, as we're introducing our Sunday listeners here to our program and talking in general about wills, trusts, and estates, we spent a lot of time talking about wills, but really one of the more important devices that estate planners use is something called a trust.
That's right. So many, and you see this, you know, get these little cards in the mail that say come for a free dinner and some estate planning advice, and then they try to sell you on what they call a living trust. It's also known as a revocable trust. And it's used as a will substitute, and they try to scare you that probate is so very bad that, you know, you want to avoid probate at all costs, and so you should be using these trusts. And so a revocable trust is what we call a substitute for a will.
And they do work to avoid probate.
And they do work to avoid probate if you do two things. You, first of all, you have to create the trust, and then you have to retitle your assets into the name of the trust. If you create the trust but leave all the assets in your name alone, we're into a probate in order to get them into the trust. And a probate meaning that we have to probate the will and start a court proceeding in order to get someone the authority to transfer the assets to the trust.
I think there's a misconception out in the general public that trusts are just for rich people. We talk about trust babies and setting up trust to take care of people for the rest of their lives, et cetera, and those are certainly aspects of it. But is really anybody can use a trust?
Well, absolutely, anybody could use a trust. There are certain situations when we do recommend using a trust. For example, if you own real estate in different states, for example, you have your Minnesota home and you have your winter home in Arizona or Florida. We recommend using a trust for in that instance because what we're doing is avoiding having a probate proceeding in both Minnesota and the other state. We also use trusts to avoid conflict. When we have just a will, we have to have a probate proceeding in order to probate the will to transfer the assets. And when we have a probate proceeding, we have to give notice to all the what we call interested persons. And they have the right to come to court and object to the will or do whatever. If we have a revocable trust, we have all our assets titled in a revocable trust, we don't have to go to court. And so if somebody wants to object to the way the disposition is in the trust, then they actually have to start a court proceeding on their own to do that. They just can't show up on the day of the hearing and say, I object, Your Honor.
All right. So a trust is useful not only for avoiding probate, but also for controlling the prospect of a fight, and I suppose for giving some more privacy to the matter.
That's right. Generally, a trust is going to be private because when we don't have a court proceeding, when we have a will, we have to have a probate. The will gets filed with the probate court, and it's a public record. As you probably saw when Michael Jackson passed away, that you know within minutes of that will being on file, it was immediately available on the internet. Now, generally, for you and I, Tom, if we do a revocable trust, it's going to be a private document. Now, poor Michael Jackson, when his trust, you know, was for somehow got online. So normally that's supposed should be private, but for some reason it got online. So his is online. You can go and read it if you want. But normally those are private.
I think people also get worried about turning their assets over to a trust and having somebody like a trust officer governing who gets how much and when out of the trust.
Well, the way the revocable trust is structured is you create the trust, you are the trustee. You have total control during your lifetime. You can take the assets out. You can terminate the trust. You can change the trust agreement in any way, as long as you have capacity. But if you become incapacitated, then the trust agreement provides a successor trustee who can just step in immediately without court involvement to manage those assets for your benefit.
One of the things I've heard about trusts is it's a possibility for the person who sets it up to rule from the grave, so to speak, that if you're not employed or you're not paying your bills, you're not getting access to any of my money. I mean, is that just an old wives' tale, so to speak?
Oh, no, Steve, we do that all the time. and we do it not only in trust, but we can do it in wills. What you're talking about are incentive trusts where we can set aside money and say, you have to be employed. We'll pay you an amount equal to your earned wages. Or if you go to school, we'll pay you so many dollars upon completion of a four-year degree or whatever.
I imagine, though, there are some clauses in a trust that a court would find to be so offensive that they would void them.
Yes, there are certain clauses that are void against public policy. For example, you can't control from the grave who your child marries. You can't force them to marry within a certain religion, for example.
Well, can you force them to get married?
No.
Okay. So certain morals clauses or lifestyle choices can't be enforced in a trust, but then who gets the money in that situation? Does it go to the person anyway?
Well, no, you can design it so that it can go if you can go to someone else. It's however you want to create it.
But it is reasonable to set up terms like employment or getting an education of some sort or being a responsible citizen, that's all okay.
Sure. And there's the other things we've seen is if, for example, a stay-at-home parent that could get paid to stay at home and raise the young children because that's a value, maybe the person who created the trust finds that valuable, or to provide seed money to create a business or enter a profession.
Cindy, does a lot of complexity and legal work go into making a trust?
Depending on what somebody wants to accomplish, it can be very complicated.
On the other hand, if it's just a matter of transferring a simple set of assets in the fashion you're talking about to avoid probate, is that any huge undertaking?
No, that is not.
Again, would you advise somebody to go on the internet, though, to pick up a form to do that?
I would be very cautious because there, again, you don't know what law that trust form has been created under and whether that's applicable to the state you're in.
And a trust might not trump certain aspects of state law. You mentioned, for example, the rights of a spouse to inherit without regard to the will. Would that also be true for an attempt to transfer assets into a trust?
Yes, the spouse would have certain rights that are protected.
Now, in addition to using a trust to avoid probate, are there other will substitutes that come into play from time to time in estate planning that are useful for the same purpose?
Yes. Sometimes a trust, you might find that the trust is too complicated, because you have to create the trust, you have to transfer assets in. When you reinvest those assets, you always have to be maintaining it in the name of the trust. And some people say that's too complicated for me. So one thing you can do is if you have a brokerage account, you can, in Minnesota, put the account in your name, and then you can have what we call a transfer on death beneficiary designation, where you name the beneficiary to receive that account. And the same is true for a bank account, although it's called pay on death beneficiary.
How about other forms of joint ownership?
Yes, there's if you would bank accounts, real estate, any of those assets, you can have a joint owner with right of survivorship, meaning that when you pass away, that other owner is going to receive that account. There's also other designations you have to be careful of, especially with real estate, is the tenants in common. So if you're looking at your deed, if it says, Tom and his wife, and it says as joint tenants, that means that it's going to pass upon it to the survivor. If it just says Tom and wife, then it's going to be you each own one half of that parcel of real estate.
And then it has to go through probate?
And it has to go through probate.
All right. So it's very important to make sure that legal title is properly documented here. And really the only way to do that is with proper legal advice.
That's correct.
All right. What about situations where people want to set up a trust in order to avoid the claims of their creditors? Is that valid? Does that work?
not in Minnesota. There's a revocable trust is not a way to avoid creditors.
All right. What if I make it irrevocable?
Okay. And still in Minnesota. Minnesota does not recognize, these are called asset protection trusts. Minnesota does not have an asset protection trust statute. So in Minnesota, if you create the trust, even if it's irrevocable, you transfer all your assets in, those are still going to be subject to creditors' claims.
Okay, but what if I have a child who's a spendthrift, who just blows through money like there's no tomorrow? Can I set up a trust that prevents the my child from having his or her share of those trust assets picked up by a creditor if they're spending money too wildly?
Yes, if it's your money. If you transfer your money into a trust and you're trying to avoid your creditors, it's not going to work. If you transfer your money into a trust for the benefit of your son, it's protected from his creditors until he withdraws it.
Okay, so that you can have a spendthrift trust in Minnesota.
That's correct.
And what about a trust for unborn grandchildren, that sort of thing, that you set something up for people that might not even be around right now but could be coming down the road?
Well, certainly you can. There's lots of times you create like a grandchildren's education trust for future grandchildren, and then you have to have some kind of a cutoff because in Minnesota the trust can last only so long. Under Minnesota law, it's up to 90 years. So when you hear words called dynasty trust, where you're creating a trust for future generations, in Minnesota it can only go up to 90 years, where, for example, in South Dakota there is no, I hate to use this word on radio, but it's the rule against perpetuities. So I can see, you know, Tom is just grimacing at that. That's a good old law school class. There's no limit to how long a trust can last in South Dakota. So you could create, you know, for future generations.
Is that why there are so many trust companies in Sioux Falls?
Absolutely.
All right.
And they also have the asset protection trusts. So you, in South Dakota, you could create a trust, put your assets in, and then it's protected from your creditors.
Can I do that even if I'm a Minnesotan?
I don't think so. I think there's certain restrictions, and so I've looked at that before for another client, and it didn't work.
And I know some people sometimes put all of their money into a foreign bank account, an island in the Caribbean or maybe the middle of the Pacific, to try to avoid the claims of creditors, an asset protection trust. Do those things work?
No, not usually.
And, of course, I suppose if you do set up something like that, you're always going to be at the mercy of some banker, if that's the right term to apply to somebody holding your assets in, say, the Turks and Caicos Islands.
Well, that's correct, because when you transfer your assets in, you have no control over them. I mean, that's, you're giving up control over those assets. And then there's special IRS rules.
So hardly ever worth it.
It's hardly ever worth it.
Cindy Ackerman joining us, Wills, Trusts, and Estates 101. Tom Schroyer is our host. We'll come back one more time. It is Minnesota Law Sunday edition. You normally hear the program Minnesota Law Saturdays at noon here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
How did you become a lawyer? Did you know the Minnesota rules for admission to practice law require that a person attend an accredited law school and pass a 2-day bar examination?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO. There's no reason to miss your favorite WCCO programs. Broadcast them at WCCORadio.com.
Welcome back one more time. Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett, Sunday edition. We're back on Saturday next week at noon. Wills, Trusts, and Estates 101. Cindy Ackerman with our host, Tom Schroyer.
We only have a short few minutes here, Cindy, and I know we've got topics that we can still talk about that would really, each of them, consume a whole hour of our show. But let's talk a little bit about probate. Probate scares people, and perhaps rightly so. It can be expensive and very, very litigious if people want to get after each other. But is it really that bad?
Well, you know, in the past, there used to be It used to be you always had to have a formal court hearing. It also be, had to be court supervised, and the court was involved every step of the way. And then there were statutory fees for personal representatives, statutory fees for attorneys. And so the costs were tremendous. And over the years, the law has changed. And so now we have informal procedures where we don't have court involvement. And we have other mechanisms in place. They took away the statutory fees for attorneys and executors, and now it's for reasonable compensation. And so the fees are not as onerous as they were in the past. There's still, when I tell clients when I'm explaining whether they want to use a will or a revocable trust, for a will, it's usually costs less to create because you're just creating the will. And then, but it's usually more expensive to probate the will at your death. Where if we have a revocable trust, it usually costs more up front because we're creating the will, we're transferring assets into the trust. But then at your death, it's very little cost because we don't have court involvement.
So an estate plan in that context is really a little bit like an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Absolutely. I can't tell you how many clients, children of clients that have come in and said, I am so thankful that you did this because it was so easy. You know, the revocable trust has the successor trustee name. They step right in. They go ahead and administer the assets, you know, pay, you know, file the tax returns as needed, and they're done.
Not to mention the tax savings, which we don't have anything close to the time to start talking about here.
Yes.
Now, will contests, they occur in probate.
Yes, they do.
And we read so often about people challenging someone on the grounds of undue influence or lack of mental capacity. What are the standards for actually overturning a will, and does it happen very often?
Well, it doesn't happen very often. The standards are very high. For example, lack of testamentary capacity, the standard is very low. You have to have, you know, what they call a lucid interval, meaning...
So if I'm screaming yellow bonkers, but I have one moment of consciousness, I can sign a will?
Right. You one moment where you knew who your family was, you knew which assets you had, you could make a decision about how you wanted those assets made, and you held it all together for that certain moment, you could sign your will, it'd be valid. And then the next moment, you could go back to being screaming bonkers again.
All right. But what if my 19-year-old girlfriend is putting the will in front of me during that lucid interval? Is that undue influence?
Well, that's one factor of undue influence. Undue influence, we want to look at the facts surrounding how that will was created. If your girlfriend brought you to the attorney to create the will and met with the attorney and then basically said this is what you wanted, and there are other factors that we look at, then it's potentially undue influence. But there again, it's very hard to prove. You know, one piece, the girlfriend being involved or your medical records showing that maybe you have some dementia is not totally going to, you know, rule the day.
The bottom line is a dysfunctional family can rip itself apart and destroy whatever is in the estate if they want to have a drag-out, knock-down fight.
Absolutely. They could burn through the whole thing.
All right. It's been a fascinating program. Wills, Trusts, and Estates 101. Cindy Ackerman joining us again on the program. Next Saturday, Tom, we're back in our normal time slot at noon.
We are, and we're looking forward to having Peter Kohler, a Moss & Barnett litigation attorney, talking about the Minnesota court system. What's in the Minnesota court system? How does it work? And giving our audience really a general introduction and an overview of all of the courts in Minnesota, and there are a lot of them.
That is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. For more, go online, moss-barnett.com. Talk to you next Saturday at noon here on News Radio 830 WCCO.